Hi, this is Rock from Happier Abroad, and today I'm introducing the founder, Winston Wu. And as a lot of us know, this guy is very broad. He's kind of a Renaissance man. And instead of trying to cover all the points myself, I'm just going to let the man himself give a self-introduction before we go further with this interview. So I'll give it to you, Winston.
Well, thanks for interviewing me. My name is Winston Wu, and I founded Happier Abroad, the website, in 2007 after I had been going overseas for a couple of years, first to Russia, then Eastern Europe, then the Philippines and other parts of Asia. And the reason I started it was to try to get my message out and make it more public so that other people could know that they could have a better life overseas in terms of dating, social life, self-esteem, and psychological issues. And I had been going overseas since 2002, which changed my life. And it opened my eyes and made me realize that I didn't have to stay in America and that there was a better life out there. And that, you know, other people like me who are not happy in America and who don't fit in to the culture could have a better and freer life overseas and just be happier and healthier. And okay. That's been my message ever since.
Well, that's fantastic. And I really appreciate that. I mean, I'm one of those people who stumbled on the solution myself long before you came on the scene, but there's a lot of guys who weren't that fortunate. Before I go on to your trips abroad, I want to ask you, you know, just a summary. I don't want you to spend the whole interview on this, but what is it that's wrong with America? What's wrong with America, maybe the Anglo world, maybe the Western world? What's the problem? Why do people need to go abroad? Why don't they stay here? What's wrong here?
Well, the problems are very numerous and complicated. I think basically since about 1980, American culture has slid down, not only morally and culturally, but also spiritually. And it's just become a lot less authentic and a lot less friendly, and the culture's just become so fake that in order to fit in, you have to develop this fake, phony personality and persona and act like this poser, and you have to do that in order to be cool. Otherwise, if you don't, you're not going to make very many friends, you're not going to be liked in school, you're not going to get dates, and you're not going to be seen as cool and popular, and you're just not going to have fun in America unless you fit into the culture, which is very artificial and phony. And just trying to adjust to that makes you a very artificial and phony person too. And I've never been able to do that because I'm kind of a deep thinker and a spiritual type. And people like me tend to be too authentic to fit into American culture. We can't act fake and cool and you know, if you're just too down to earth, you just don't fit in. And I mean, American culture wasn't that fake before. I think in the early 1980s, it started getting that way. And so by the time you reach high school, I mean, if you don't act like everyone else, if you're still a nice down to earth guy, you're just out of place. You just feel withdrawn and intimidated because everyone just seems so unfriendly and hostile. And there's just this vibe where there's this hostile social vibe where, I mean, it just feels very unfriendly and very toxic.
Okay.
I think that's the main thing. There's many other reasons, but of course people are spoiled too. Like kids and teenagers are spoiled. Mm-hmm. And it just carries on over. And
you know, Winston, you know, I tend to agree with you because I discovered the same thing myself independently. And I will say that nowadays, looking at the big picture, looking at the whole world, I've noticed something that's a little bit disheartening. And that's, you know, the world's developing pretty fast. There's certain areas of the world that used to be kind of poor and now they're kind of rich. And what I've noticed is that there's a correlation between these American values and the problems that you're talking about in America and economic development. So as a country moves up the economic ladder, it becomes in a way more Americanized, more Westernized. I'm assuming that you agree that the problem's not just in America now. I mean, it's probably in the UK, it's probably in Australia. I mean, a lot of posters have talked about this, perhaps even parts of Europe, continental Europe, and even parts of Asia now. Would you agree with that or not?
Yes, I would. There is a correlation between economic wealth and prosperity and just the culture.
Poison, cultural poison.
Right. There is a cultural poison. As a country becomes richer, the people become more snobby and more closed, and neighbors start to not talk to each other. I do see that correlation, but I think in America there's also this narcissism, this toxic culture, and this lean toward being a degenerate culture. Ever since the 80s, the culture became more and more degenerate and less wholesome. So,
yes.
For example, I don't think all wealthy countries are like that. For example, if you go to Switzerland or Germany, those are first world, you know, rich countries, but the people are a lot more down to earth and more authentic.
Would you say it's a problem with Anglo countries? Maybe especially trying to copy American culture, maybe Australia, maybe the UK. A lot of the youth there trying to copy the worst parts of America. Do you think that's a possibility?
Yes, I do. But it's not just Anglos. I mean, you know, where I come from in Taiwan, I mean, the young generation has become more and more spoiled too.
Yeah,
I heard Singapore is also very materialistic and
yeah. I think that Singapore and Taiwan, they've copied some parts of America, but at least they don't have the extreme degenerate culture. They're a little bit more reserved in that sense. Would you agree?
Oh yes, I definitely would.
So I mean, for me, even today, Taiwan is a lot better than the U.S. because you don't have to observe all of the sick things that you observe here. I mean, there's so many disgusting things you see here when you go to certain places. Fat people with tattoos and really awful attitudes. You don't see that in Taiwan. You don't see that in Singapore. There it's more about materialism. There it's more about, you know, being cool. But I think even they know better than that. You know, it's really a shame what's happened in this country. I hate to be negative, but, you know, and I'm injecting my own bias here, but I really do agree with what you're saying. Now, maybe I should ask you now then, the so-called happier abroad universe, these are countries and areas of the world where maybe we can escape some of these problems. And you've traveled to quite a few countries, and more importantly, you've had access to hundreds, if not thousands, of travelers and thinkers who participate in your site, who you talk to, who you interact with in various ways. And what areas of the world do you think are the best areas to escape the toxicity here in the U.S.?
Well, from my experience and based on what I've heard, the best areas are Eastern Europe, South America, some parts. Russia is a lot of fun, but it's kind of dangerous in that there's a high crime rate and it's kind of chaotic, but it's a fun country. And definitely Southeast Asia, like Philippines, Thailand, those are great countries for living and dating and making friends. And I haven't been to China yet, but a lot of people have said that China is a fun country. It's authentic. It is kind of materialistic there. And money oriented, but China is so big and diverse that you could always find very down to earth people and down to earth women to date. And
yeah, like Falcon.
Yeah, so most people that I know have, especially guys, that have a very positive view of China. So I would say Southeast Asia, China, Russia, and the former Soviet republics like Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan. And Eastern Europe, of course, like Poland, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia.
Maybe even Western Europe, right? In some ways.
In some ways, yeah. Western Europe is more expensive, and a lot of people have complaints about Western Europe, about it being too westernized and materialistic and snobby. But, I mean, I've also heard the opposite, that people are more down-to-earth and more passionate about life and just more real. And there's a lot more culture. Europe has a very rich culture, and they're more into social connection rather than just being isolated and being consumerist, and they're not as paranoid of strangers.
Yes.
I mean, they, in some countries like Italy or France or England, they can be very cliquish too, but I think it's easier, I still think it's easier to meet people, because when people are down to earth and modest and not as arrogant,
mm-hmm.
They're just easier to talk to, you mm-hmm. know, especially if you're that way. You know, if I'm down to earth and they're down to earth, it's easier for us to socialize and hold a conversation rather than me trying to connect with some airhead person in America who's snobby and just out of the earth, you know.
You know, Winston, from what you're saying, whether or not you know it, a lot of your biases are coming out. Mm-hmm. But that's fine. The point I want to make here is that Happier Abroad, and I've said this, you know, before, it's a tailor-made solution. Now, Winston happens to be an intellectual person, a down-to-earth person, and guess what? The kinds of people who tend to match that, maybe they're more in Europe than anywhere else. I would say that if today I was interviewing a different fellow and that person was into dancing, into partying, maybe I would say, hey, you know, you should go to Colombia. Maybe you should go to Brazil, because you would vibe the best there. You know, everybody vibes differently. And Winston, I think, maybe is European inside, kind of like in some ways, maybe I'm Asian or Taiwanese or Chinese inside. But I think all of us on the website, Happier Abroad, and many others, they have big problems in the U.S. The world's a big place. And if they do some research and talk to people, they can find a place where they're going to be happy. And in Winston's case, it's been a combination of Southeast Asia and Europe, and you know, in his case, it's Russia, you know, Eastern Europe, and possibly in the future China. But it's fantastic that you've found your soul in these places, because you were so miserable before you started traveling. Now I want to ask you to just give a quick summary of the countries you've visited and what you discovered in each one, starting, you know, going in chronological order. And I think the first time you went abroad was when you were fairly young. You went to Taiwan, right? So maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, when I was 17, I went to Taiwan in the early 90s, and I was trying to get away from high school because the environment was so toxic and so unfriendly, and I was bullied and teased every day, and it just destroyed my self-esteem, and I was so depressed that I could not even function or do homework anymore.
What part of the U.S. was that?
The Bay Area, okay. California, okay. Fremont, to be more exact. And so, you know, it damaged me so much inside that I had to stop going to school in my junior year. And so I went to Taiwan for about a year, mm-hmm. teaching English and just spending time with relatives and having fun. And this was when I was 17. And the thing is, in Taiwan, I didn't feel this persecution, this toxic energy where everyone was bullying me and teasing me. I mean, it was very peaceful, and people were very down to earth, and I could be myself. I could suddenly talk loud. I didn't have to be shy anymore, because when I was joking with my relatives or friends, I could talk a lot louder and just be more spontaneous and bubbly, which I'm usually not. But because I felt more comfortable in Taiwan, I could feel my personality could be more bubbly.
They took you seriously. They appreciated you, and you felt like a whole person.
Yeah. I mean, I just felt accepted, you know.
Whereas in the U.S., you felt like you were somehow incomplete or you weren't good enough.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know why. I could never understand why I couldn't fit into the U.S. because it seemed so insane and so abnormal. And it was like, how do you fit in? How do you be accepted? And it, you know, some of these things are hard to put into words, you know. Yeah. It's like, if you don't know how to fit into the high school cliques and the social scene, I mean, there's not a formula you can follow to click in.
Did you feel that maybe
not...
you were ugly or stupid? Did you when you were in the U.S., did you imagine, hey, what's wrong with me? Did you even think about that? Did you wonder how you were deficient? Because people were treating you as if you were deficient. Did you ever wonder why? Did it ever occur to you?
Yeah, I've always wondered why, but it the whole scene was just so insane, it never made any sense.
So you understood mm-hmm. even that at that early age that the problem was maybe the scene and not you? Because I didn't understand that myself.
No, yeah, I didn't understand either, because when you're a teenager, I mean, you want to fit in, you want to belong, and if you don't, you think there's something wrong with
right.
you. But so it was always a mystery to me. I couldn't figure it out until I was an adult. But you know, I also realized that in order to be cool, you had to wear, you know, a certain t-shirt like Motley Crue, or you had to change your hairstyle, you had to listen to rock and roll
and
do drugs.
And you didn't
really
feel comfortable doing
that.
Yeah,
I didn't know how to do that because that wasn't me. I mean, I couldn't be something I wasn't.
Well, you know, so, I'm so glad to hear you say something positive about Taiwan, because I know that you've had, you know, some experiences that are frustrating, but I'm glad that at least it was your, because like you, it was also my first Happier Abroad country, mm-hmm. and the country that kind of, my discovery country, if you will. So right. I think in that sense, we're both similar. And now I know after that you went back to the U.S. When you went back to the U.S., did you feel like you were a different person?
Oh, yes, of course. After a whole year in Taiwan where I was freed from bullying and persecution, I finally felt like I could grow as a person normally, like my mental and spiritual self could grow. And then all of a sudden, I started becoming more passionate about life, and I could express myself, I could express my views in writing mm-hmm. and speaking, and so I became a lot more smart and more
you realized your
articulate
potential. You came closer to realizing your potential.
Yeah, before that I could not think or write clearly at all.
You were repressed.
Yeah, I was way too repressed in America and persecuted. And once I was freed from that, I developed a lot more confidence, a lot more excitement, and I became a lot better writer too. And I became a vegetarian at the same time too. But I don't know if that had anything to do with
born.
It.
You were born. Now how many years?
Reborn. Yeah.
You came back when you were 18. How many years passed before you took your second trip? And tell me about that second trip.
Well, when I went back to the U.S., I finished one more year of high school in a different school where no one knew me, so I wouldn't be persecuted and bullied again. And then after that, I went to a junior college, then a state college. Mm-hmm. I mean, college was kind of easy and peaceful, but that's when you know, that was the early 90s. That's when America started being more and more isolated and unfriendly, and where people just minded their own business, and it was really hard to make friends at that time. Mm. So, I mean, my life was not very fun. I mean, it was kind of boring. I did have a Vietnamese girlfriend in college for a while, for a few years, but we didn't have that much in common. And then after that, I moved to Washington State to be with a American girl that I met online. But that turned out to be kind of a boring relationship because, I mean, we were just, you know, in love with the idea of being in love. And so it was kind of a stale relationship. And then it lasted until about the year 2000. Mm-hmm. And then I moved up to Washington State to be with her. Okay. And then I didn't start going abroad after that I moved to Nevada to do a show.
Okay.
And then when that went south, I started going abroad in 2002 in Russia.
So you had a few false starts in the U.S. And then how old were you when you took your second trip abroad? Were you what, late 20s?
Oh, yeah, it was 2002 and I was about 28 or 29.
Okay,
yeah.
So since you came back from Taiwan, 10 years have passed. You've been in the U.S. for 10 years. You've dated a couple girls. You've tried a few jobs. You've finished your higher education. Nothing's really panned out as you'd hoped, so... what gave you the idea to go to Eastern Europe and Russia? How did that come to you?
Well, I just felt that, you know, every time I'm single in the U.S., it's like I go through this dry spell of years without dates. And I didn't want to go through that. I mean, after I broke up with my American girlfriend in Washington, I didn't want to go through years of being lonely and single again. And at that time, I just had it. You know, I didn't want to put up with this, and so I started looking at the Russian, you know, whatever you call it, bride scene. At that time it was
really big.
Yeah, it was starting to take off, and I figured, you know, at that time I was looking for a beautiful white girlfriend or wife.
Okay,
and I figured this was probably the only way I could get it because in America it's like.
Yeah, we
know. I can't just go out and get a girlfriend because it's not that easy. So,
you thought you'd go to Russia and find a wife?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to hurry up and settle down because I was tired of bearing this loneliness every single day, it was so torturous.
Yeah.
And
I find that interesting because you went with one goal. You had goal A, and goal A didn't pan out for you, but you discovered something brand new. So you got goal B, even though you didn't know what that was at the time. And that worked out really well for you. It's kind of funny how sometimes you go somewhere for the reason A, and it turns out you don't get what you wanted, but you get something else, which is maybe just as good or even better in some ways. And in your case, you went to Russia and you discovered a whole new world. And that's probably when you started, I mean, that's, I'm guessing that's when Happier Abroad kind of came to you, right? Not from Taiwan, but from your second trip.
Yeah, Taiwan was like a foreshadowing of my Happier Abroad life. And I didn't know it at the time, but, and it's too bad I didn't go back there again during those 10 years. But in Russia, I got more than I expected.
So you went to Russia and what happened?
Well, I was amazed at how easy it was to meet women. I mean, they would make eye contact with me and approach me. And, you know, that had never happened before in my whole life, not even in Taiwan. And
we're so, talking about beautiful young girls, right?
Yeah, beautiful, attractive girls, and they were everywhere. And, I mean, I felt like I was dreaming. I didn't know it was so easy, and they were so down-to-earth and warm and sociable and friendly. And for me, that it was like a dream come true, because I never imagined that would be possible. And the people were very authentic and passionate and down-to-earth, and there was so much beautiful architecture that I felt really happy in my soul just from
the European
culture
side
and
you had the social side.
Yeah, so I got a lot more than I bargained for. I mean, it's not just, you know, meeting girls. It's also that the culture is so different from the U.S. Russia is a lot more different from the U.S. than the U.S. is from Taiwan, because it's not, they're not workaholic. They're not, they're a lot more passionate. They're a lot more, they're not paranoid, you know, like the U.S. is. It's like everything is the opposite, and which was very refreshing to me. I felt the more free and liberated than I ever did, which is ironic, because I always thought that Russia was a communist country and it was not a free country. And so I learned that everything that I've been told is the opposite of what was true.
And it's often the case.
Yeah, so I really came out of my shell in Russia, just like I did in Taiwan, but to a much larger degree.
Now, why isn't that you didn't find your dream girl, bring her back, get married, and live happily ever after?
Oh, in Russia? I think, you know, I was overreaching. I was, because women were so friendly and open, I thought I could get the, you know, the most beautiful, you know, and the most beautiful is not going to, I mean, beautiful girls are going to date me, but they're not, they may not take me seriously as a romantic partner.
Yeah.
And I kind of reached too high.
Yeah.
For what I could get. But I still had fun and
it's a very positive experience in your memories.
Yeah, it is, cuz I felt alive. I could be myself. I could be alive. I could be open and outgoing. I didn't have to be repressed and shy like in the US. And so it brought out a part of me, and it was liberating in that it made me realize that the problem was not me, because if the problem was me, then how come in Russia I could be have a fun dating life and be myself and be more open and meet girls and get dates so easily.
But
so it was very liberating to realize that.
Winston, you got to remember that the circumstances, I'm just going to interject a little bit of devil's advocate here and see how you handle this. The circumstances of you being in Russia were quite different than being in America. In America, you know, this is where you grew up. In Russia, you were a tourist, an exotic tourist. If you had gone to school in Russia, say if you had been there, if instead of going to America at the age of three, you went to Russia at the age of three from Taiwan, and you grew up there, how do you think you would have been treated in school? Do you think it would have been a good experience? Do you think you would have been happy, or do you think you might have been bullied there, especially since you're not white?
Well, I would have been happier socially and in terms of dating, but of course Russia does not have the material comforts that America does, but one of our advisors named Ladislav said that when he was a little kid in Russia, he was a teenager in Russia, in Tula, Russia, in a town called Tula.
Right.
And he said that in junior high, the girls would flirt with him. And
okay.
He's not even a good-looking guy. And the
I'm sure he's going to thank you for that.
Well, sorry about that. But I mean, not a great-looking guy, but girls would flirt with him. And it was easy, for him to get dates. And then when he came to the U.S., all of that was gone. I mean, so there's definitely a much more social connection, even if I grew up in Russia. But of course, I'm not going to be spoiled and have all the material comforts of America.
Okay.
So there's a trade-off.
No, I understand. Yeah. I was thinking more about, is it possible they might bully you for being a minority? You know, because it is I've heard stories that Russia can be a very racist place, too.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I mean, in other countries, people get made fun of in school, but I don't think it's going to be the violent, extreme bullying like in the U.S. It's not the epidemic, and you can prove this. If you go to Google and type in school bullying in America, and then type school bullying in Russia or another country, you'll see that there's no comparison, that the hits that come up for
bullying in
America.
Well, remember, this
is in
the English language. If you
huge.
Did it in the Russian language, maybe all the hits would come up in Russia.
Yeah, but you could do the same for school bullying in England or Germany something. And
okay.
I mean, it's nowhere
sure.
near the epidemic as bad. I mean, in America, it's just
okay.
ridiculous.
So, I mean, I'm glad you're being very honest about this. You're not one of these people who paints this rosy picture and says everything's going to be perfect. You admit that not every girl is going to fall in love with you. You admit that it's not always that easy, maybe, to find a beautiful girl. But in spite of that, so many things were so positive for you there that overall you were just a much happier person.
Yeah, because I could in Russia I could have the fun I could never have in America.
Sure.
And it's not easy to find a good wife. I mean, some people find it right away, but some people find it after several years. But, you know, when it comes to serious relationships and finding a wife, that's different. I mean, in Russia, there's a similar problem with loyalty as in America. The women are not very loyal. I mean, men and women are not as loyal to each other as they are to their families. So it's not easy to find a good wife.
Okay.
But it is easy to get dates and to just have a short-term fun or companionship or just to go out. I mean, I'll always have... When I go out to dinner, I never have to go out to eat alone, for example. I can always find a girl that will want to go with me and to
Now let me ask you this. You traveled quite a bit around Russia and Eastern Europe. What are the main cities you went to? And if you did want to find somebody who's more loyal or down to earth, what do you think would be the best of the places you went in Eastern Europe and Russia to find that?
Well, I went to a lot of cities on the western side of Russia, not just Moscow and St. Petersburg, but little towns like Novgorod, Cherepovets, Tula, and Izhevsk, and Kazan. And there's all these little towns and villages around.
Okay.
I went to about a dozen of them,
maybe
more. I would say, from what I've heard, the best place to find a wife or a good girl in Russia is... like the smaller towns or the villages where they're not as corrupted by Western society and they're not as spoiled and they're still sweet and innocent and wholesome and they like men.
Right.
That's what even Russians told me. But it takes time to find a good woman because some of it is luck and destiny because it depends on where you are. You know, you could be at a bus stop here or a bus station here at this time or that day in that location and you just meet her and it just seems accidental and you can't control that.
The good thing is when you do see her, you can approach her. That's the good thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're always happy
and there's a good
you.
Chance that she will talk to you, that she'll give her number and that you can follow up.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I met... you know, hundreds of girls that way. I mean, just talking to her on the bus, on the street, in the subway.
That's amazing.
Just, you know, all I have to do is say, "Excuse me, miss," and then she'll stop and talk to me. And if she doesn't want to give me her number, she'll just say no. And she won't act like I've crossed the line or transgressed or did something creepy. I mean, it's not creepy to flirt or hit on girls in Russia.
From your experience, did you notice a visible difference, the towns and villages versus Moscow? Were girls easier to talk to? Were they easier to date? Were they easier to court? You know, if you compare the girls you met in Moscow, met in some of these villages and towns.
Yeah, I guess it's the difference between cities and small towns. But I mean, I found girls in Moscow easy to meet too. But because you know, in a big city, you have all kinds of people. You have snobby people. You have people that came from the small towns looking for work. You have people passing through. I mean, you can always find friendly girls in Russia, even in Moscow. But, I mean, people say Moscovites are spoiled, and maybe they are. I mean, there's always
There's
going to
be
snobs.
A lot of outsiders that come there from other parts of Russia.
So. Yeah, and so not everyone is rich there. There's a lot of people struggling that are just as friendly as in the small towns.
Okay.
But
the
small town life is slower and... of course, you'll be more exotic there because people in small towns haven't seen foreigners as much.
Okay.
So they'll be very curious to meet you, at least. And when people are curious to meet you, it opens a lot of doors socially.
Yes.
You know, but whereas in America, when you go out, if you don't, you know, if you're a stranger, nobody talks to you because, you know, you're just a stranger. And And there's no reason to talk to you unless it's for business, some type of business purpose.
Now, I'm going to ask you one more contrast, because you didn't just go to Russia. You went to a few other countries. Would you contrast Russia to some of those other countries you went to in Eastern Europe?
Yeah, well, I went to Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, and Poland, and the girls there are just as sweet and feminine and humble and modest. The only difference I found is that they're more reserved. They're a little more quiet, whereas Russians are more like loud and spontaneous and aggressive and more direct. Mm-hmm. In Eastern Europe, the girls are very friendly, but they're more reserved. But they're not stuck up or snobby or anti-men. They don't hate men.
Are they as easy to meet in Eastern Europe outside of Russia?
Not as easy, but a lot easier than America for sure. Because you see, when women are humble, it's easier to talk to them than if they're you know, arrogant or snobby. And
I mean, if you were going to court a girl, where do you think you'd find a higher percentage of quality women for long-term relationships? Would it be Russia or Eastern Europe outside of Russia? I mean, you suspect from your gut feeling from what you witnessed there.
Well, in terms of long-term relationships, I would, from my experience, say something like Poland or Lithuania, because in Poland, the girls are they have strong Catholic values.
Okay.
So, whereas in Russia, it's Eastern Orthodox, but they don't have, you know, a very strong sense of morals.
Okay.
In Russia, it's about loyalty to family, not loyalty to your husband or something.
When you marry them, aren't you their family too or not?
You would think so, but
it's kind of like Thailand. They're not. Okay.
Yeah, not as much. Okay, okay. But it depends on the person. But
all right. Now let me ask you this. You know, when you talk to these girls, what percentage of them, if they're young and pretty, what percentage of them are single and available, would you say?
Well, that's the amazing thing. I would say half the girls I approached said they had a boyfriend and half didn't.
Even in Eastern Europe?
Yeah, even in Eastern
Europe.
Doesn't
matter, Russia, Eastern, same thing. So there's a lot of single women, is that what you're
saying? Yeah, I was quite surprised, because in America, when I approach a girl and talk to her, almost every single time she says she has a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Even if she doesn't, she just says that to get rid of me. But in Russia, it's like at least 50% of girls tell me they don't have a boyfriend.
Okay.
I mean, that's a huge number. And
now I'm going to ask you another contrast. You went to Russia and Eastern Europe two times, right?
Right.
And how much time was spaced between trip number one and trip number two?
Well, actually, three times. About 6 months, I think, between all three trips. Yeah.
Okay, so it's pretty much in the same period, right?
Yeah, between a 3-year period.
Okay, and we're talking 2002 to 2004?
To 2005, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, so nothing really changed much during those 3 years, right? I mean, your experience is kind of pretty much the same from trip one, trip two, and trip three, right?
Well, generally, yeah, I would say that in 2005, they seemed a little more spoiled than...
Okay, that's a very important point, because it's 10 years have passed almost since you left. And you've read posts from other people who've been to Russia. I mean, we've got some experts that have been there on the forum who've written extensively. Ladislav always knows a lot about that area. And I think he's traveled there in the interim. Do you think it's possible now that today's Russia, today's Eastern Europe is totally different from the one you experienced, that today if you go there, you're going to see a bunch of spoiled young women on their cell phones expecting you to spend lots of money on them and not having any appreciation that maybe they've been Americanized or become more materialistic at least? I mean, isn't that a possibility at least that you have to consider?
Well, of course. I mean, that's always a possibility, but I would say Russia is such a big country that you could always find some town or village where there's still friendly women that want to meet you. And Russians are very curious people. And if you look at the history of Russia, it's always been chaotic and up and down. It's never been stable. So, you know, one minute it might be prosperous, and then another it'll go down. And that's the way it's been for hundreds of years. And even if Russia had changed so much that I didn't like it, I mean, there's always Ukraine. I mean, it's still a very big hotspot for men to get wives. I mean, people like Mark Davis and A Foreign Affair still run tours to Ukraine, and their clients are still getting wives. And so I mean, the women in Ukraine are still, there's still a lot of gems in Ukraine to meet.
I hope so. I mean, it's so, you know, it's so difficult when you're in my position. You know, I've never been to the Ukraine, and all I know is what I read. And first of all, you know, like the Philippines, there's a lot of bad stuff. I mean, Ukraine is a hotspot for prostitution and for a lot of sleaziness.
And
But
corruption, yeah.
between the cracks, perhaps there are some great opportunities that don't get as much airtime, just like you have in the Philippines. I don't know. I do know that women in the Ukraine, I know this much, they're gorgeous, they're beautiful. I mean, there's no place in the world. I mean, there's a few places in the world, but I mean, they're definitely in the top tier when it comes to looks. Russian women, Ukrainian women. I just can't see how anyone could argue against that.
Yeah, and that's the biggest secret, the biggest difference is that in Russia and Ukraine, you can meet a very gorgeous, attractive, tall girl or woman that is down to earth and modest and humble and easy to connect to and easy to meet and talk to. Whereas in America, you'll never find a really attractive girl that's down to earth and modest and humble. I mean, humility almost doesn't exist in the US. Nobody's humble in America anymore. If you had a time machine and went back to the
Yeah,
70s, you could find
I
beautiful
know.
women that were down to earth, but not in modern
Right,
America.
I
And that's
understand.
one of the biggest differences,
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, really, I think, you know, as a person who's been living abroad for a long time, I try to remind people of this. Try not to think about America too much because America's not even a good benchmark. If you use America as a benchmark, it's going to be very easy for a country to look good. But instead, I like to compare country B to country C. I like to compare Taiwan to Thailand. I like to compare the Ukraine to Russia, because those kinds of benchmarks make a lot more sense. That's the way things should be. And so I'm going to ask you, if you're, say, in the Ukraine, or if, well, I know you haven't been in the Ukraine, but if you're in Russia,
Well, I was in Ukraine for
oh,
2 weeks,
okay, I'm
actually,
sorry,
but
yeah,
not too long, but
but let's just say that you are a guy of modest means. You know, I don't know, you make 40,000 a year. You're average looking and you're middle aged. You know, you're Mr. Average, you're Joe Average. Maybe you're divorced, maybe or maybe you don't have kids. But you want to go to Russia or the Ukraine and you want to find a very pretty or beautiful girl to date and maybe be your future wife. And you like young girls, you like girls in their 20s. Now, how doable is that? Especially you want a girl who doesn't have kids herself. How doable is that, you think, in your
Well, it really depends on the guy's personality, his looks, and how he vibes with the women. I think it's definitely more doable than in America because,
Like I said, forget about America. America's not a good
yeah.
benchmark. Forget about America. Compare it to Taiwan, compare it to the Philippines, compare it to China, but don't compare it to America.
Yeah, I if you're comparing to Taiwan, I would say Taiwanese are more age conscious,
Okay, then Russians.
and Russians are more
Looks
open,
conscious.
yeah. I mean, in Russia, they of course they care about it, looks and age, but I mean they're more flexible with it because
Seriously, okay, let's
there's a
say
shortage of good men
a
in
guy who looks
Russia.
like
So,
Mark Davis. Let's just say if he had to start over again, how easy would it be for him to find a nice.
Oh, him for sure. I mean, he looks masculine. He has that big body mode
Okay.
type that Russians and Ukrainians like. So
Okay.
he would have more choices than I would.
Okay.
And before he met his wife, he did have a lot of
Okay.
beautiful women,
Yeah.
that he was courting,
Okay.
that he could date from Russia and Ukraine, but there's such a shortage of eligible decent men in Russia that the women will bend their criteria if they find a good guy that
Okay.
can support them and that has
Okay.
is not a bad person.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that in Russia, if you're a nice guy who's educated and well-mannered and you treat women good, that's seen as refreshing. I mean, you don't have to be a bad boy like in America to be exciting and interesting. Because in America, if you're a nice guy, you're invisible, and then if you're a bad boy, you're more exciting to women. But in Russia, it's the inverse. If you're a bad boy, it's nothing special because there's a lot of you know, like bad boys who were low lives and low quality guys. But if you're a decent guy, it's like you're refreshing. The women find you exciting because 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 you treat women well. Because if you look at if you go there and see the typical guy there, how you know the typical guy there is a drunk and is abusive and kind of acts low class, because you know they don't have a lot of economic opportunities there, they're kind of become low life, a lot of the guys, and they're just, you know, low quality, and they just have bad manners, and they don't treat women good.
I'm going to interject on this. Mm-hmm. I've heard both sides of this. I've heard that Russian girls like manly men and tough guys, and I've also heard what you're saying. So I hope certain guys on the forum, is it Have to Fly or people like that, might expound a little bit on that topic. What kinds of guys are likely to have success in Russia? Because I'm not sure, but you know, because I hear both sides, I'm confused about.
Well, I think I don't see the discrepancy there, because they do like manly men, like muscular, big men.
Yeah,
they don't like skinny guys.
No, I'm
like
talking
Taiwanese
about personality
girls.
Guys who, if guys behave weak, in other words, they don't take leadership, I think those girls will walk all over them.
Well, of course. I mean, they want guys that are strong.
Okay.
But they want guys that, you know, are not drunk. Strong leaders, like a rock, a shelter they can lean on.
All right.
But they don't like drunks and lowlifes and abusive guys.
Okay,
you know?
Fair enough. All right. Now I'm going to move on to the third stage of your life abroad, and that is Southeast Asia, the Philippines. Now, again, how much time passed between when you left back to America from your third trip to Russia, the time you went to the Philippines, and what were the circumstances that got you to go to the Philippines? And, you know, what, explain that a little bit.
Well, my last trip to Russia ended, I think, in the summer of 2005, and then the following summer of 2006, I traveled around the Southwest because I've always wanted to see Arizona and the many canyons and desert scenes there. And so after that summer, in the late fall, like in October or November, that's when I flew to Hawaii, and then I went to with a friend of mine there, who helped me with design my website.
Okay.
We went to the Philippines from Hawaii.
Okay.
And so, you know, in the fall of 2006 is when I first went there.
So you went there for business reasons?
No, I went there also to date and maybe find a wife, because, you know, I figured that three trips to Russia is enough.
And you said, okay, it's not working for me with Russians. I'm going to try something brand new, right?
Well, semi. I mean, it's not that it wasn't working. I just didn't want to go through hopping from town to town again and just, you know, with short-term dates with nothing coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt three trips was enough. It was time to see somewhere else, too.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you know, I heard so many good things about the Philippines, that the women were more loving and loyal, that I felt like I would be treated better, you know, romantically, and that I would do better because I'm Asian and I wouldn't be as racially discriminated against. And I would... and plus, you know, I like the dark exotic look a little bit too, but not too dark, but a little bit dark. I mean, it has that tropical island exotic look, and so I was kind of curious about that. So it was just a change of venue, and I kind of got the sense that, I mean, I met the best girls in Russia when I was leaving, so I was kind of a little bit of Murphy's Law there, but I kind of felt that overall that, you know, the numbers game didn't work for me in Russia, and that, you know, whenever I found a girl that really liked me, she would never be the type that I like.
Yeah.
So in Russia, if I went back, the best I could get would be a girl that I wasn't not a very attracted to, and that would be the best I could get. And so I felt like I could get a better looking girl in the Philippines. And and you know, I liked it. I mean, when I first went to the Philippines, it was fun. It was. I mean, the girls were just as easy to meet and date.
Was the Philippines what you expected it to be?
For the most part, yes, but I didn't know it would be so materialistic and so polluted.
Mm-hmm. Materialistic?
Yeah, because me and my friend, we went to this town called Angeles City, which is like a red light bar district.
Mm-hmm.
And so it attracted like a lot of materialistic types. And... and I wasn't planning to stay there, you know, for a long term. We were planning to go to another part of the Philippines,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, there was just so much fun, so many things to do there, and so many girls to meet, and that we just never left, you know, mm-hmm. for a long time, and so we kind of got stuck there, and we never went south of the Philippines.
Okay.
After that, but I was dating so many, you know, girls that you know, it just became like a heaven or a paradise for a while. And you know, when you're on cloud nine, eventually it wears off, and then the negatives of the country start to get to you. Of
yes.
course, that always happens, because no matter how good a place is, it always has negatives, and mm-hmm. you always get tired of it.
Yeah.
So
that's the reality. Wherever you go, there is no perfect country in the world. And that's why, ideally, mm-hmm. what I've found is that if I have the freedom to travel, when I get tired of a country, if nothing else, I can take a break and go to another country or another region in the same country. And then after a while, I'll miss it and want to go back. You know, even coming to the U.S. is like that. I'm taking a break from Asia. Now, so you felt that you actually met... I mean, if I have to compare, did you have more access, you personally, as a Northeast Asian American... would you say the women you had access to, in other words, dating access, romantic access, were better looking in the Philippines or in Russia?
Well, obviously, of course, in Russia, they're better looking.
They're better looking, but I'm just saying the ones that you had access to, because...
Oh, yeah, that's hard
that's
to
a hard,
say.
That's
you know?
Hard, isn't it?
Yeah, because...
In the Philippines, it's like picking, you know, needles in a haystack. There are a few pretty
right.
girls here and there, but... If you would just generally compare the women in Russia to the Ukraine, it's like night and day. The women in the Ukraine or Russia are gorgeous compared to the average Filipina. But even in the Philippines, there are a few pretty girls here and there.
Yeah, and it's a different type of beauty, too.
It's a different type of beauty.
Because a white girl's beauty is different than an Asian
That's
girl's
true.
Beauty.
That's a good point. So it's really, it's like apples and oranges, isn't it?
Yeah, and I dated so many girls in both countries that it's hard to say, but because, you know, there's a lot of beautiful women I date in Russia, but they just weren't, I mean, they didn't take me seriously as a romantic
no.
partner. They just
you
wanted
novelty.
To go out and
you're
yeah,
a novelty.
Yeah, it was a novelty. And for them, sometimes it's just a culture exchange. And oftentimes it's just curiosity, because
yeah.
if you're different, people are curious about
yeah.
you in Russia, even beautiful women. And they're just more social and sweet toward men. I mean, women admire and appreciate men in Russia. So
yes.
even if they're not interested, they still are going to treat them good, because
right.
men are appreciated and not vilified in Russia like they are in the U.S.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I dated so many women, and it'd be hard to make a comparison. But I would say
I mean,
I've dated...
generally, would mm-hmm. you did you feel more popular in the Philippines or in Russia as a romantic man, as a romantic male, as a playboy?
Probably more in the Philippines, because
okay.
you know, me being Chinese, I mean, it's seen as attractive in the Philippines.
Okay.
And
yep.
they like the slanted eyes
yeah.
of the Chinese.
Yes.
And my height was not an issue, because the
yep.
girls are shorter.
Yes.
So of course more girls are going to see me as
okay.
as more of a romantic partner than
okay.
as just a culture
now,
exchange.
Now there's so many people out there who say that the Philippines is a poor country. You're from a rich country. They just want you for your money. They're only interested in you because you can take
mm-hmm.
care of them materially. Do you agree with that or not?
To a certain extent, it's true. But you know, I mean, there's more to it than that, because, you know, girls that are poorer are going to be nicer. They're going to be sweeter, too. It's going to make them more humble.
Right.
So it makes their character better. It makes them nicer people.
Right.
And so, you know, you got to consider that, too. And, you know, I mean, really, unless you find your true love, nothing is free. I mean, everything is an exchange of some
right.
sort. I mean, they need money. You need love.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a fair exchange, as long as it's done honestly, you know, as long as,
yeah.
as they treat you good. That's the important thing. I mean
right.
I don't mind, you know, helping a girl financially a little bit, as long as she's honest and she treats
mm-hmm.
me good. And you know, and men have always been the providers, you know, and women have always been the, you know, the domestic helpers, and so that, you know, they've always had that symbiotic relationship, and so to me that was natural, you know, as long as it's not excessive, as long as she's not using me, as long as she respects me,
yeah.
you know, of course she's going to need money. That's everybody does. I mean, American
well, you know
women
what?
Need money too, you know.
You know what? I'm going to agree mm-hmm. with you that, yes, what you're saying, it's right. I mean, even the girls in the Philippines who are maybe with you for material reasons can actually be good partners, unlike many other parts of the world. However, I want to say something else, interject something from my own experience and what I've observed in you. As you admitted, you've spent most of your time in Angeles City. I don't think Angeles City is very representative of the Philippines as a whole. I think it's a very special place. And I've spent a lot of time in Makati, Metro Manila, and I've traveled to some of the other cities. I've dated women there. And I will say that, believe it or not, there's a certain type of woman in the Philippines who might be interested in you or me for reasons other than material reasons. And I'm talking about women in their 20s who are reasonably attractive. They might be interested in you. For example, what would be the benefit of being with you besides, you know, the fact that you're from a first world country, you have a first world passport? Well, you know, in the Philippines, the movie stars, the successful people, they tend to be mixed. They're either mixed with Chinese or Koreans, or they're mixed with white. But somehow, if you look at TV versus the people on the street, there's a very big difference. And your blood is valuable for children, because the children you have with an indigenous Filipina girl are going to be, on average, more attractive, more exotic, and have more opportunities than just two Filipinos together. So you have that advantage. And the other thing that Ladislav talks a lot about is there's an affinity for Western, especially American culture there. It's permeated a lot there, more than anywhere else I've seen in Asia. And that gives you a sort of an edge with some people, the fact that you're American. So I think that if you ever go back to the Philippines, I hope you will explore other possibilities than just going back to Angeles City. Unless you know you would just want to stay with Diane. I mean, if you go to, say, Metro Manila, or if you go to Cebu or Davao, I think you might discover women, a certain type of woman who just wants to date you, doesn't need your money, but is happy to bond with you and is happy to know you as a person. And maybe, you know, maybe even a girl who has more money than you. That's possible, believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, I should have brought...
That's something I don't know where else you could find.
Yeah, and you're actually a living example of that, because you've dated women that have good jobs and good businesses and are, you know, middle class or upper middle class.
Yeah.
And so you're a living example of how, you know, like, us guys are not limited to only the poorest Filipinas. You can, if you are a decent person and you look for it, you can date middle class girls too. So you're not only limited to desperate girls. So, you know, that's another good point. And another point I forgot to mention earlier is that, you know, even if a girl is really poor and needs money, she's not going to just pick anybody with money. She's going to pick somebody she likes and gets along with, too.
Because you had, like, a rich friend who didn't do very well there, right?
Yeah, and, you know, my girlfriend Diane, she had guys that were courting her and pursuing her that were a lot wealthier than me, but she didn't like their personality or their looks, and so she turned them down. So it's not just about money, because a relationship built on money alone is never going to last. It's never going to be good. But so there has to be some chemistry and some like between, and some compatibility between them, because a lot of guys with money get rejected too because the women don't like their personality or their looks.
Well,
so
I can tell you, I have personal experience of a woman basically choosing another guy over me, and that guy was uglier, older, and poorer than me, but she just loved the guy. Yeah, looks aren't even that important. I mean, looks are always important, but I think looks in the Philippines, it's a different standard than the U.S. Looking decent versus looking like a model or looking really handsome. Looking like a nice guy, looking approachable, looking safe versus looking like a fashionable guy or a cool guy. You know, nice guy works better in the Philippines than a lot of countries, right?
For sure. I mean, being nice in the Philippines is considered a good thing. Women like that. They appreciate it. It's not considered a weakness like in the U.S. or even in Russia. It can be a weakness, but in the Philippines, it's appreciated. It's considered a good thing, and you know, love is very subjective. I mean, it's not logical. I mean, you can't. No one can predict who's going to love who, and so, you know, it is not. It's not all about money, like a lot of critics think. But you just have to put yourself in their shoes. I mean, if you were a poor girl in the Philippines, would you just go with anybody that has money, or would you go with somebody you like? And
well, let's be honest.
Yeah, of course, you would go with someone you like, not just has money.
Let's be honest. There's a certain set of girls in the Philippines, and this might be a rather big group, who will go with almost anyone. They're that desperate. I don't recommend dating those girls. I think you can do a lot better, unless you really have some big problems and you can't attract anything better. I really think certain posters like New Life in the Philippines have done a big disservice. He's painted a picture that's way too negative. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, definitely.
The guy's already given up. I mean, really, you do have to spend time there. You can't just jump off a plane and expect it all to come together in 3 weeks. For any country, not just the Philippines, for things to really work out, for you to really discover the value, you need to invest medium to long term. You need to spend months or years there. And Mr. S has talked about this. You know, he's talked about how it takes a lot of time if you really want to get the most out of a place like the Philippines. You can't just go there for 2 or 3 weeks. I know that Mark Davis takes people to Russia.
Ukraine.
And he does everything in 2 weeks. And I know that, he has a very intense, focused approach. I think some guys may get lucky with that. On my side, I think it's better to go to the country. And even if you don't localize, even if you don't learn the local language, at least you have to spend a lot of time there and network and really get to know the place. Because being a tourist and being an expatriate are very different things. And that's the only way for you to figure out whether or not it's going to be the country for you and going to have the right women for you. You can't know a woman in 1 or 2 weeks. I mean, that's a roll of the dice. If you get lucky, great, but it's risky, That's
yeah, it's always better if you can to stay longer and to network. Not just go to bars to meet women, but meet them on dating sites and join special interest group like meetup.com. Like meetup.com has special interest groups for people with certain hobbies.
Do they have that in the Philippines too?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of meetups in Manila too.
Yeah, there's that. There's church. If you're a Catholic or Christian, the Philippines is going to be a great place. There's even places for Muslims there. And if you if you're into the more high-so crowd, Mr. S has talked about certain clubs that you can join in Metro Manila or maybe Cebu, where you can meet that type of people. There's something for everybody. I'm going to say something bad, though, and I know Winston's going to agree with me on this. There's no perfect country. When you go to the Philippines, you're going to be shocked at how bad the air quality is. You're going to be shocked at the traffic, the noise, how bad the food is. There's a lot of negatives there, but you know, there's ways to circumvent that. I mean, there are areas where you can avoid some of the pollution. There are a lot of special restaurants where you can have better quality food. There's a lot of Korean restaurants. If you're in an international area, you can go to other foreign restaurants run by foreign management, Chinese, Western, even Middle Eastern. There's a lot of options. Even Angeles City, that's one of the pluses of Angeles City. There's quite a few foreigners there who have, restaurants that have pretty decent food. But Winston, I want to ask you one practical thing, because, you're kind of a spiritual person. You're not the most practical person. If somebody's just coming out of school and they don't have much of a job prospects here in the States, how can they support themselves in the Philippines, or how can they make this happen practically? Because they're going to need money, because they have to pay rent and they need food and they need entertainment. So, how can they get around that?
Yeah, unfortunately, the Philippines doesn't have a lot of money-making opportunities or business opportunities for they're easy, of course, for, a typical Western guy, especially a young guy who's not very experienced. The only thing that person could do, I guess, would be to work in the U.S. and save up some money, but not, you can't. Of course, you can't go into one of those permanent jobs where they only give you 2 weeks off a year. I mean, unless that's all you wanted, you'd have to live very frugally and try to move in with your parents and then save up all your income.
Well, let me throw out an idea.
Even if you just had a minimum wage job,
let me throw out an idea for you, because I have friends who do this. What about if they they spend a few months of the year working in a place like Saudi or even Taiwan. Like I told you, I have a friend who's making over $2,000, maybe $2,500 a month in Taiwan. They work 6 months a year, and then they mm-hmm. go and they use their savings to live quite a few months in the Philippines, and they rinse and repeat, and they keep doing that. What about that?
Well, yeah, that's definitely an option too. I mean, Taiwan is a great place to teach English because they pay you very well, and the cost of living is very low there.
Yeah.
And so you could save up a lot of disposable income in Taiwan. And Taiwan is close to the Philippines, so you could always fly between there. It's only like a 90-minute flight between the two countries. And so you could use Taiwan as a financial base in Asia, teach English, save up a lot of money, then go to Philippines or China or Thailand. And
right.
that would also be another great option.
Or then even Saudi, right? Saudi Arabia or some of the places that Ladislav goes.
Yeah. Or that. I mean,
or online teaching.
Yeah, and there's ways you can teach on Skype now,
yeah.
too. And in our forum, one of our advisors named mm-hmm. Ladislav has a thread about that. And he's even written an ebook about mm-hmm. that, which he'll send out for free if you ask him for it.
Well, okay, so now, Winston, here we are. You're back in the U.S. You've had some remarkable experiences, but you're still looking and searching. And I want to know what your plans are for the next 2 years. What's on your agenda now, and what are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, you know,
personally,
it's
socially,
it's
and,
hard to say because you know, when you're an adult and approaching middle age, you're supposed to settle down, and you know there's a wisdom behind that. But you know, if you're adventurous, you have this travel itch, and you want to see new places, like go to China, go to Europe, go to Mongolia, go to Eastern Russia. I mean, there, you always have this travel itch to explore new places.
Okay.
And so you gotta, someone like me has to satisfy that, but at the same time, you know, be responsible and try to settle down. So it's hard to balance both, you know, but I think if you do a little bit of both, like, you know, visit my girlfriend in the Philippines and you know, visit my parents in Taiwan and then travel
so,
to China.
Well,
I mean,
kind of got the best
you could do
of
a little
worlds.
Bit. Of, you could do a little bit of both. You know?
You've got the girlfriend, you've got the kid, you've got the parents, and you can spend time with them. But you've also got the freedom. So you know, you've got enough money. You can go to China, you can go to Thailand, you could even go back to Europe. I mean, all you have to do is all you have to do is make choices and act on those choices.
Exactly, and. Yeah, and I'm lucky that I, you know, have an online business that gives me income so I can have more freedom. I think the key in life is balance. You know, you need a balance of everything. You need a balance of you know, travel, of time.
The middle road.
You yeah,
know,
the middle road.
Yeah.
You need a balance of family time, of travel, of mm-hmm. working, mm-hmm. of exercising, of eating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need a healthy balance of everything in life
yeah.
and not to be too extreme to one side or another. I think that's the key to life, and the ancient Chinese philosophy says that too, you know, that balance is the key, and ancient Greek philosophy says that too, balance.
Well,
everything in moderation, balance is the key.
Okay,
know?
So let me ask you that, the one area we haven't talked about but I've observed is spirituality, and I've seen that, you know, that's an area of your life that you're interested in and that you even have a passion for. Maybe you could talk about ways in which you've realized, you know, you've had some spiritual experiences in your travels, and, you know, maybe what you're hoping for again in the future on that.
Well, I would say, you know, it depends on what you mean by spiritual. In the U.S., if you want to be by yourself and isolate yourself in the house and meditate, I mean, that's very easy to do, you know, because people leave you alone. They don't, even your neighbors don't talk to you or bother you very much. But I would say traveling is a spiritual experience in that, like, for example, when I was in Russia, I would spend a few days or a week in one town and go to another town right afterwards. And then it was spiritual in that every time I moved from place to place, I practiced detachment, non-attachment. So every time I went to a different place, I would detach and shed the experience and the connections I made in the previous town.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you practice shedding the attachments from each place that you go, it's almost spiritual in that you learn this Buddhist philosophy of non-attachment. You kind
mm-hmm.
of learn to detach. And
learn not to be clingy.
Yeah, you learn not to be clingy. And it's helpful because, you know, when negative things come, you know, like, or negative people come into your life, and you're so good at detaching from them, it becomes a skill. You detach from that toxic environment or toxic people
very easily.
And
not only that, what I've learned is that the more clingy you are, it's kind of a paradox. The more clingy you are, the more you repel people, and vice versa.
Yeah, especially in the U.S.
The more people want to get away from you. Mm-hmm. The more independent and self-reliant you are, the more attractive you are.
Yeah, in general, but I would say that's primarily true in the U.S. because in Russia, if you're persistent and you pursue a girl that doesn't like you, she begins to admire you because it shows strength.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and in the Philippines, it's good to be needy too because, you know, the Philippines, in poor countries, people are interdependent. They're not independent. So if you're clingy and needy, it's seen as a sign of true love. It's actually admirable to a lot of women.
Okay.
You know, so it's not the negative stigma that it is in the U.S.
Okay. Well, that's fair point. Wow. I mean, this is great. I'm glad that I'm kind of opened you up on things you don't necessarily talk about that much on the forum. And, you know, I'm running out of time because I need to travel today, but there's so much more that I would like to talk with the founder of Happier Abroad about that I hope we can do a part two to this interview, perhaps over Skype or otherwise, you know, when we're both in Taiwan in the near future. Is there anything, you know, in conclusion of this part one of the interview that you'd like to throw in there now? Because I know this interview is probably going to go online very soon. Is there anything else you would like to say that I haven't really covered yet that you wanted to say right now?
Well, I think the most important lesson to all this is that, I mean, it's easy to do all this once you're abroad, but if you're in the U.S., you may feel stuck at a dead end and depressed and hopeless, and the most important thing is to keep hope alive. I mean, everybody needs hope. Everybody needs something to look forward to, and sometimes that hope comes in religion. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that hope comes in the hope of a better life overseas. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is everybody needs hope, and whoever you are, you always need to maintain this hope, this vision of a better tomorrow. Otherwise,
it drives you.
Yeah, otherwise, it drives you. Otherwise,
it's very easy to get depressed. Otherwise,
yeah. Otherwise, you'll get depressed and down, and you won't have a reason to wake up. And you need something to wake up for. Not just, you know, for going overseas or dating, but for life in general. You need, it's better to have a lot of passions and interest in life rather than to have one or two. Because if you only have one passion and it goes south, then, you know, you'll have nothing to live for. But if you have 5 or 10 passions in life, you can always, you know, focus on the few. It diversifies your interest. And so if some things in your life go south, you can always, you know, go toward other things. Like, for example, if I'm in Russia and my dates don't show up and I'm disappointed, I'm not that depressed because I can go to the museum and have a good time looking at historical artifacts because I love history, I love culture. And so I have a good time walking by myself into a museum in Europe, in Russia, in those kind of cultures. And I'm happy with that even if I'm not dating anyone. So because I have different interests, I can have different more to live for than just someone with one or two interests. So diversifying your interests is important.
Okay. I think that when we do part two of this interview, I'm going to likely throw specific cases at you. Maybe the case of a guy in a certain circumstance, and I'm going to ask you to suggest some solutions. I think that would be very practical because, like I said in the beginning, you've had access to so much information from all over the world now between you and other guys on your forum and other contacts. We do want to provide solutions. You know, Winston's here to help people. He's not, you know, he's trying to give something back to the world, and it's absolutely, you know, just a giving thing. He just wants to help people. He's not asking anything in return. So I really think that if you're the kind of person who wants to get past the negativity, and you're the kind of person who doesn't just want to gripe and complain, but really wants to find, you know, great things in life and solutions, then you really should take advantage of this opportunity and pursue the resources on the website and maybe even, you know, post new threads with questions and I mean, really specific questions, not something general that's already been covered. So for now, I mean, we have to end this because I need to go, but very soon we'll have part two. And thanks so much for you know, for having this interview today, Winston.
Yeah, thanks for interviewing me, Roth. Yeah. This is great, yeah. And it's really informative, and it's something we need. We need more podcasts, yeah, like this.
We'll be doing this with. I'm sure you'll be doing this
because
with
because some people are more audio. They're more audio oriented than
exactly
visual, or they don't. Some people don't like to read, so they like, yeah, to listen to these things. And I'd like to say that, you know, my website is happierabroad.com, happier, I-E-R, abroad.com. And you can go there to learn more about our movement and our solution. And we also have a forum where me and Rock participate in, so you can post questions or to us if you want to. So it's www.happierabroad.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Do you think that was good or not?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess you'll have to listen and decide.
Yeah.